Welcome to the C-Suite podcast that we are recording at Shop Talk here at the Mandalay Bay, Las Vegas. My name is Russell Goldsmith, and together with Graham Barrett, we'll be interviewing a number of the speakers and attendees here at the event.
We're producing this episode in partnership with Bread Financial, a tech-forward financial services company providing simple, personalised payment lending and saving solutions. Really hope you enjoy the show. I'm here with Jake Stein, who is the head of retail at Uber Direct. Jake, lovely to see you here.
Thank you for having me, Graham.
How's your show going so far? You enjoying it?
It's been great. Having some great conversations with partners, tech providers, and really enjoying the whole setup.
Excellent. Now tell me about Uber Direct. How does it work?
Yeah, Uber Direct is essentially an extension of where we built our business originally, which is on Uber Eats. So you probably know of tons of grocers and retailers and food providers and restaurants and convenience stores that are on Uber Eats to, you know, acquire new customers and move product. Well, those same brands are interested in being able to offer delivery through their own channels, through their apps and through their websites. And Uber Direct is essentially a tool for them to tap right into that same courier network that is fulfilling all of the demand for Uber Eats, can now fulfill their same day, next day, on demand delivery through the same couriers for those brands.
Okay, and did you always have that in mind when you were launching Uber Eats, that it would eventually lead to this? Was it kind of happened organically?
It's always been in the background, because once we realized that we could prove that sort of an on-demand delivery service really made sense and it's now part of the customers' expectations, we realized, well, we've got this massive courier network.
Yeah.
Why not we help brands, you know, grow their own channels and take control of the customer experience, the loyalty programs, et cetera, and you know, keep revenue in their own channels.
Yeah. Now, there's a lot of talk about delivery, isn't there? And like, you know, the customer expectations, whether next day is fine, whether it's, you know, within an hour or the rest of it. So how have you seen customer habits and customer expectations changing?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's been obviously a big bump in delivery around COVID, because it was a requirement. But I think at this point, what we're seeing is that about 75% of customers are expecting express delivery, and 72% of those customers are more than likely to continue buying from that merchant that offers it.
Okay.
And the good news is, you know, it doesn't have to always be express. You know, it can be scheduled delivery, it can be end of day delivery, it could even be next day delivery, and merchants have an opportunity to capture that demand, you know, in their space versus necessarily having it going out to all the other marketplaces instead.
Yeah. And is it quite bespoke to each brand that you speak with? They all want their, you know, something slightly different from the offering?
They all have their own vision on how it's going to work, but I think there's enough momentum in the industry that there's some pretty, you know, strong standards. You know, the brands that have choice for their customers are the ones that seem to be most successful in the space, because a customer can come and say, based on how fast they want something or what they're willing to pay, if I know that I could get maybe free standard shipping in, say, 2 to 5 days, or I can pay a slight premium and get it next day, or I can get it now for a larger premium, means they don't have to go somewhere else to look where to find that product based on how they want to get it. So we're seeing a larger trend moving towards offering those types of service, those multiple choices.
Right.
And the integration into our platform is pretty straightforward, and there's a whole host of really great partners out there that can help them do that, that can orchestrate all of that delivery need for them.
Wow. So it sounds like an ever-evolving picture, really. Where do you see Uber Direct going next?
I think one of the things that we've expanded to a lot this year and will continue to expand into is more in the B2B space as well. So there's a lot of demand, whether it be in auto parts or the service industry, you know, where you've got a technician sitting at a job who needs to get a part, and they're highly paid, highly skilled workers, that to have them go back to a fulfillment center and pick it up is probably not the most efficient use of their time. Why not have us come deliver it, and they can continue working on that job and get the part? So there's a huge space in the service industry and the parts industry from a B2B perspective that we're pretty thirsty for.
Yeah, and just finish up, as head of retail, what's exciting you about where this could go next?
I think it's exciting to help drive change in consumer behavior. I think brands are now seeing that it's not just a trend that, you know, they could maybe tap into. It's something that they can lead their customers into based on how they want to interact. So it's fun to watch how brands are being creative in the space and figuring out, you know, maybe it's a subscription for unlimited same-day delivery like we do with Sephora.
Yeah.
You know, or packaging lots of different items together at once to make it even more efficient. So there's a lot of really exciting moves by the brands themselves, and we're happy to be along for the ride and support their efforts.
Yeah. Well, listen, we're very happy that you turned up today to speak with us.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate the time.
Okay, I'm here with Jaz Sabharwal. He is the Senior Director, Marketing Strategy at Bread Financial. Jaz, lovely to see you.
Lovely to be here. Thank you for having me.
And I must say congratulations, first of all, because just before we start this interview, you said today is your 11th year anniversary at Bread Financial.
That's it. Yeah, I'm so happy to be here to mark the occasion and certainly a lot of excitement around the event itself.
That's awesome. Well, congratulations for that. Now, we're here to talk about your State of the Middle Class Shopper report, aren't we? So what I'd be really keen to find out is how do the insights in this report, how do they inform what you do in the marketplace?
Yeah, it's a wonderful question. You know, as an organization, we're really focused on starting with the voice of the customer, whether that's our business strategy, our product design, and the experience for our customers themselves. And so when we have these proprietary research studies, we're actually able to extract the learnings to infuse how we operate as a business, how we inform our clients' work, as well as how we show up in the marketplace for our customers. As an example, we actually just leveraged a lot of the studies to learn that customers of a younger generation, particularly in Gen Z, aspire to have more information to help inform them about their financial management. So when we learned that in research, what did we do? We launched the Bread Financial Education Hub. And with that, we saw within 1 year a 9% improvement in sentiment of our customers because we made things that matter to them available about how they can manage their money and their finances. And that's just a great example of how we took a need, stemmed from our research, went to market, and made a difference. And it doesn't stop there because as we look at the sentiment of the customer and we track trends, pulses, and everything in between, we constantly have opportunities to improve and get better, and that's exactly what our focus is as a company.
And how nimble and agile can you be? You know, you release some research, you release a report. How quickly then can you get something into the market?
What we've tried to do is make our processes internally more agile and more resilient as the customer needs shift. That comes from experience in technology and platforms for financial payments and options for those payments, as well as trying to make sure the customer has the ability to control what their needs and preferences might dictate in their experience as they check out with our brand partners or use one of our proprietary products.
Mm. How do you ensure you are launching the right product, but also at the right time?
So for us, we really invest heavily in understanding the segments of our customers, right? You think about the different generations, everything from Gen Z to boomers, right? And with that, we're trying to find the right intersection of the voice of the customer, the appeal for certain product features, right? As well as the financial objectives of our programs with our partners, as well as our own products themselves. And when we find that intersection, we find harmony through research and optimization of different models and predictive behavior and whatnot. We then enable a frictionless shopping experience, so it's easy for customers to apply for our products and have a pleasant experience as they go through what often are both necessity and discretionary purchases of their aspiration. And so, as an example, with one of our sports and entertainment clients, we did this recently where we took over a program from one of our competitors, and in the first 6 months of relaunching that program with the right product in the right channels at the right time, we actually saw a 2.5 times improvement in account volumes over the just in the first 6 months over the entire prior year with our competitor when they had the program with the same client.
Wow, that is impressive. Yeah, now you mentioned Gen Z there, so I'm really interested to know how you cater for their specific needs. I mean, what are their specific needs?
Yeah. It's if you think about it, Gen Z is interesting because they're the first truly digital generation, right? They don't know what life was like without the internet. Mm-hmm. And that being said, when we look at our research as an example, they have up to a 4 times greater importance on things when it comes to mobile apps with brands they shop with, the website experience, social media content generation, all that. Mm. So through our product design process, we actually try to weight the preferences of the specific customer segment, like Gen Z, to make sure the benefits resonate and they match. And that's exactly how we bring research to life. And then what we do in the marketplace is continue to watch trends so that we can recalibrate those benefits and readjust wherever the focus might be for an emerging segment like Gen Z, which will be the future best customer for a lot of our brand partners, and of course, as we enable our own products in the market.
Now, one thing Gen Z are going to be very familiar with, and one thing we're all going to be very familiar with very soon, is AI.
Yes.
It's a big talking point at the conference here. How are you using AI and machine learning to improve the customer experience?
Yeah, as we're here this year at Shop Talk, right, AI is something everybody's talking about. And the good news is that we're seeing value in using AI more as a teammate that is an apprentice. Hmm. And I use that analogy because the more information you invest in AI and the models, the inputs, the better the outcomes, right? In our early days, we were taking a more of a cautious position. Now we're seeing improved efficiency with our analytics models of up to 8 to 10% in their outputs. We're also seeing the opportunity, most importantly for our customer, to personalize the experience. And how do we do that? As an example, with one of our jewelry partners, we actually helped them with some fatigue with their email response rates where they weren't seeing the engagement that they had sought historically. So we built an AI-powered content engine for them, and it went beyond payments. It's just about doing the right thing for the customer to help our brand partner just grow and create those personalized connections. So we looked at past shopping history with the brand, as well as their interest in different items online, brought that together, and guess what? We rolled out this new tool powered by AI. Response rates improved by more than double.
Yeah.
And I think it's funny because as I was making my way out to Shop Talk, right, I had a very negative experience where an AI-driven chatbot completely messed up my reservation, right?
Oh, no.
And when that happens, you think, oh my gosh, AI, put the brakes on it, forget it. Mm. So for us, again, it's investing with caution, with confidence, but never to replace the talent that we have across the globe with over 7,000 associates. It's actually more around focusing on how we can enable and unlock the value of our talented associates to make a difference for our customers.
What's going to be interesting is when we come to this event next year to see, you know, in just a year, how things have changed and how more you're using AI and how that whole sector is developing. Anyway, that was great to hear all those insights. Thanks so much, Jaz Sabharwal. Hope you enjoy the rest of the time here.
Thanks again. Appreciate it. Have fun as well.
I'm here with Kimberly Wallengren. She is VP Marketing North America at Coach. Kimberly, it is lovely to see you.
Lovely to be here. Thank you.
How's your Shop Talk?
It's been great.
Yeah.
So much energy, lots of great inspiration. It's been a great day.
No, it's great, isn't it? Now, you spoke on a panel, didn't you, called Finding and Reaching Customers in a Fragmented Media Landscape. What does your media mix look like at Coach?
Sure. So we are targeting Gen Z. So we are really trying to meet that audience where they are. Mm-hmm. So I would say a vast majority of our media mix at the moment is in the digital channels. And that's mostly paid social, as well as online video. And we're doing a little bit of testing and learning in CTV and streaming, which has been really exciting for us, actually. And I think that we'll probably be leaning into some of that a little bit more as well.
Sounds great. So why have you moved away from traditional media then?
Yeah, I would say that like we haven't necessarily moved away from it. It's less of a majority of our mix at the moment. Mm-hmm. We're trying to get as pinpointed as possible and really hit some sufficiency levels in those key channels where Gen Z is before going down kind of to the next levels of media. So for example, we need to be on TikTok, we need to be on Instagram, we need to be on YouTube. And so like, how do we like make sure that we're reaching sufficiency there before we go to something else, Pinterest, et cetera. And so when it comes to like traditional channels, like out of home or things like that, like first of all, there's a lot of waste. So it's a lot of like missing the right target and not hitting the right target. But on the same time, it's like, I just want to make sure that the sufficiency is met there, the reach and frequency is met in the channels that really matter right now, so that we can build brand awareness and brand love.
Yeah, I mean, what's the key to communicating with Gen Z? I mean, what have you learned about that?
Oh my goodness, I wish I had like a specific answer for that. What we do at Coach, which I think is really important, is we do a lot of consumer insights. So we are consumer obsessed. We look at behavior, we look at demographics, we look at ethnographics. We spend a lot of time with the consumer, which I think is really important. Mm-hmm. And we do this at different times during the year in different markets. So it's not just like a one and done thing. Oh, we know who the consumer was in 2002. No, we do it often in multiple times during the year, which I think is really important. We also have some of the best, I would say, people who can tell us about the consumer, which is our store teams. Mm-hmm. So we are on weekly calls with them, learning about what the consumer is responding to, what's resonating with them, what are they talking about, what media channels are they bringing in, what are they showing on their phones, and things like that, so where they're getting the inspiration. So we get a lot of insights from our store teams and, of course, from our social community managers as well.
Yeah. So you're literally getting that live from the store.
That's, absolutely. You know, that's it's awesome. So important. I've always said the two kind of most important divisions in a business are the store teams, because they are speaking with the consumers on a daily basis, and the community managers, because they are in the weeds with everything that's going on with Gen Z.
Sure. What would you say your brand mission is at Coach?
Yeah, this has been like a really nice, I would say, journey for us. In 2022, we actually introduced the proposition of expressive luxury. Mm. And expressive luxury is our way of like kind of disrupting the industry a little bit and flipping things around. We are more, the brand is more self-expression led versus brand led. We're doubling down on our inclusivity, which has always been a core value to our brand. So it's just standing up as a more important value in there. And then really trying to make these emotional connections with consumers. So less being a transactional brand, oh, I need a handbag, I'm just gonna go buy Coach. And more like, I'm gonna go buy Coach because I love that brand. And so like really making these more emotional connections, which leads to brand love and honestly sustainable growth for the brand. At the same time, we did a lot of insights, as I said, did a lot of research with our consumers. And like, I would say it was exhaustive and extensive. And we learned about this idea of like the multiplicity of selves with Gen Z. So they aren't just that one true self. My generation as a vintage millennial is that one true self, right? Like I know who I am and I'm gonna like be that person. Well, that's not how this generation is responding and feeling. And so it's very challenging for them. And we have like identified that as like a real, I think important insight with the consumer. And so everything that we're trying to do is to bring them this courage to be real, this courage to be confident, the courage to be them, their multiple selves, and how can we help them do that, and what is the platform that we can kind of provide to them, and the confidence that we can provide to them in that journey.
Yeah, sure. Well, listen, you mentioned consumer insights, so just to finish up here, it'd be great to hear about your campaign, Find Your Courage.
Great. Now,
what's that all about?
Yeah, so we just launched our latest iteration of Courage to be Real with our Find Your Courage campaign. It's a really great juxtaposition, I think, of like reality versus the virtual world, or the physical world versus the virtual world. And it, at the end of the day, it's really just doubling down and like ensuring that consumers know that they have the courage to, they can find their courage. And so we've got some great celeb talent that's working with us on this campaign. Each of them are kind of expressing their own journey. So we have five iterations of this beautiful kind of, this beautiful film campaign.
Okay.
And they're all kind of identifying and finding their own courage within the campaign.
Tell me more, who's on it?
We have Lil Nas X, we have Cami Mendez,
wow.
We have Lee Young-ji from South Korea, who is incredible and is really resonating incredibly well in North America. She's such a fun personality, and I'm super excited about a lot of the work that we're doing here in North America, but also in her own market. So yeah, more to come. But
we will look out for those campaigns.
Amazing.
They sound fascinating. Yeah,
wonderful.
That's brilliant. Kimberly Wollengren, thanks so much for joining
me today. Thank you. Take care. Nice to be here.
So I'm now joined by Riyad Hijal, the Head of Commerce Solution Management at SAP. Riyad, thanks so much for coming on and joining us. You've just made an announcement here at Shop Talk about your open payment framework. Why don't you start by just telling us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having me, first off. And yeah, we did. So we're very excited. We've announced the H2 availability, H2 meaning back half of the year, of our open payment framework. And what our open payment framework is, it's a set of services that enables merchants to gain agility and speed as they embark into their payment strategy, including in situations where they might have global rollouts, where they might be working with different payment service providers or different payment gateways. I mean, as I'm sure you know, those tend to be very regionally specific. And so really our ambition is to help said merchants be able to go to market much, much faster without having to reinvent the wheel every time that they want to connect a payment service provider or payment gateway. And we're doing that using our composable approach, meaning that, you know, customers, merchants can basically bring up those services at their own pace. You know, it's not a monolithic approach where, you know, your hands are tied and you're only allowed to work with a single payment service provider. So, you know, if you have a payment gateway of choice with whom you already do business today, that's absolutely fine. If there are on the list of the partners that we're going to market with initially, and that's Stripe, Adyen, Worldpay, and Wallex, then that's even better for you because, you know, the connectors are already there. But if they're not, you know, then we also provide low-code, no-code type of technology to allow you to bring, you know, your preferred partner into the frame.
Great. Now, given the breadth of merchants and brands and, you know, retailers that you're kind of supporting and working with, there's a couple of questions I've got on trends that we've been talking about here, which I'd love to just get your thoughts on. The first one is Gen AI, something that's coming up a lot in the podcast. What are you doing at SAP to help your clients, those merchants, manage this whole process?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a huge, huge investment area for us. If you attended this morning, my colleague from Google, who was talking about Gen AI, she was being pressed by the speaker to answer, you know, is Gen AI being overhyped at this stage, underhyped, or, you know, at the right level of hype? And, you know, I think she very deliberately did not answer the question, because the reality is that, none of us really know how this is going to play out. The one thing that we do know is that, I mean, similar to, you know, when digital commerce started, you know, 30 years ago, it is going to transform the way that ultimately we shop. But of course, like any massive transformational technology, there's a phase of hype initially where, you know, especially vendors, we're guilty of that, tend to maybe slightly overmarket. So, that being said, from SAP's perspective, I mean, we are reinventing ourselves to become really an AI-first company. And if you look specifically at commerce, we have released at the end of last year our CX AI toolkit with a set of use cases around, you know, curation of the product catalog, for example,
okay,
where we enable, merchants to not have to do the very tedious and time-consuming process of, you know, making sure that their PDPs, their product description pages, have all of the attributes, all of the metadata, all of the right, description in place. And of course, we know at this stage how important it is to have all of these for conversion and so on and so forth. And so, you know, it takes a lot of the load off of the business users. That's one example around content curation, catalog enrichment, and so on and so forth. It's still early days, yeah? So, I mean, what I tell customers, all of our customers are asking us about, today, I mean, about Gen AI, what are some of the use cases we support? And there's definitely, you know, a lot of interest, but they're all proceeding, I would say, with caution.
Yeah.
Experimenting maybe with a subset of the catalog, with a given region, and to ultimately be able to attribute true business outcome benefits, you know, before investing further, which I think it's the right way to do to approach these things,
yeah.
Right?
So as well as helping with the speed of the process,
yep.
I don't know if it's too early, but are you seeing any kind of trends in terms of Gen AI helping with increased basket size, for example, or things like that?
Absolutely. I mean, some of our partners like Coveo, for example, have released Gen AI capabilities around search, right?
Okay.
And I mean, we've seen merchants even such as Walmart in the last few months announce very similar capabilities where, you know, they're bringing natural language processing and the ability to search in a much more, you know, natural language, let's say, friendly way,
yeah.
And then leveraging, you know, the LLM models to then be able to, you know, provide a much better discovery experience. And that ultimately, you know, if you're able to discover better, ultimately that drives, absolutely, you know, higher conversion average, higher average order value.
Yeah.
So absolutely, I mean, the promise is definitely there, but it is gonna take a little bit of time. And right, okay, now, you know, there's obviously a lot of hype, but eventually we feel strongly that it will materialize.
Well, on the topic of consumer spending, the next thing that I wanted to ask you about in terms of trends and statistics, let's say, is Bread Financial. Obviously, we're here on their booth recording this podcast. They've actually released here at Shop Talk their own State of the Middle Class Shopper report.
Mm-hmm.
There's a number of things it's covered, but one of the areas is it shows that despite challenges, you know, within the macroeconomic environment and with, you know, we're looking at higher interest rates and inflation, but the American consumer continues to kind of exceed expectations. They're still spending. And I was just wondering what you think in terms of that, you know, a consumer, particularly within retail, are they going to continue to purchase, not just on the necessity items, but maybe the luxury or aspirational items? What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. And the research we've done shows pretty much the same results.
Right.
I think it's a testament to the underlying strength of the U.S. economy as a whole. Consumers actually had their savings drastically increased during the pandemic, and so I'm in Canada, but even recently I was reading an article around how a lot of those savings are yet to be, actually spent. And so it's great to see that despite the macro challenges, there's still robustness there. And we expect cautious spending to continue. I mean, customers are thinking twice, before spending their hard-earned money. But for now, the indicators, at least in the next few months, are pretty positive, and that's also what we're seeing.
Great. And then there's one last thing that I want to get your opinion on while we've got you here, and that's in terms of marketing to the younger consumer. That's something, again, we've been asking a number of the guests here. What's your thoughts in terms of what brands need to do in terms of reaching them?
The ever question of the younger consumer.
Indeed.
Yes. Absolutely. I mean, what we're seeing, it started, of course, with millennials, well entrenched now with Gen Zs, is for brands to really be authentic in the way that they market and they engage with the younger consumers, and really focus on what they care about. I mean, sustainability is a prime example of a topic that is very, very dear, to Gen Zs. Gen Zs will make brands pay a hefty price, if they don't communicate with authenticity. I think that's one. They can cut through the bull fairly easily, unlike maybe, their grandparents, who are more geared toward more traditional marketing. What we're also seeing is the channels, of course, through which they engage with brands, has drastically changed. I mean, TikTok in North America, has been getting a lot of press as one example of such a channel. Marketplaces, of course, Amazon's and like. But also, direct, right? Going direct and DTC. So I think it's a mix of making sure that your message is the right one, that it resonates, that it speaks to their values, that it's authentic, that it's not just, for example, greenwashing as it relates to sustainability, but that you actually walk the talk, and then that you reach them on the channels that they're engaging with you or without you about your brand, right? So just make sure that you're there.
That's fantastic. Well, listen, I really appreciate you giving us your thoughts on those various kind of trends, and also good luck with the announcement today. But for now, Riyad Hijal, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
I'm here with Jesse Goldstein. He's General Manager Retail at MoMA. Jesse, how you doing?
Doing great, thanks.
Really good.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, good to see you here at Shop Talk. So how's your experience been so far? You enjoying it?
It's been great, learning a lot.
Yep. And tell us about the MoMA Design Store. That's what we're here for. How did it come about?
Yeah, so MoMA Design Store and MoMA Retail, I should say, has been around since the beginning of the museum.
Okay.
Way back in 1930, there was a courtesy desk in the lobby of the museum where we would sell things like postcards, art reproductions. Something that's special about MoMA is we're the first museum to have a curatorial department dedicated to architecture and design.
Okay.
So over the years, that department has acquired a lot of design objects. Mm-hmm. And from those design objects comes the DNA of our retail store. So whether we're buying to offer to our customers lighting, furniture, an electric piano, it's all informed by that collection of the museum.
Okay.
And so that's been really important to the DNA of our offering. Fast forward 90 plus years, and now we're a global omnichannel retailer. We have stores in the museum. We have another store in Midtown. We have a store down in Soho. We have licensed stores in Japan, in Hong Kong. We have a wholesale business, a very strong and growing e-commerce business, and really amazing burgeoning licensing business with fantastic relationships with global partners like Uniqlo, Swatch, and Lego, to name a few.
Yeah, that's really cool. So what I'd like to understand is you don't sell just anything, do you? There's, I imagine, quite a strict selection process for what's sold in the stores. How does that work?
That's right. And I would say that our selection process is really different than you'll see anywhere else.
Okay.
And there's three reasons. The first is, by virtue of our connection and our being part of MoMA, our buyers are really steeped in the global design community. Mm-hmm. So when they go and travel the world every year to find new products, and they do, they're doing it in a really collaborative way with designers, with artists, with an eye towards making unique products and bringing exclusives to delight our customers.
Wow.
Second, we're always asking the question, why MoMA? Is this product representative of a specific design movement? Is it educational? Is it innovative? Is it using materials in a new way? These are all questions that are informing the products that we're buying. And then third, and maybe most important, every product we sell is approved by a curator, which is to say, the same curators that are curating shows at MoMA are also giving the final approval to every single product we sell in the store. If it's not approved by a curator, it's not in our store.
Yeah, I love that, the way that you go out, you know, internationally to, you know, to find those products to put in the store. That's really cool. How does that then support the wider objectives of MoMA?
Right, good question. So MoMA's mission statement is to connect people around the world to the art of our time, right? And one way we do that is through MoMA Design Store. One of the themes we've been really exploring in the last year or so is turning the existing model of museum retail on its head. So typically when you think about museum retail, you go and you have your experience in an exhibition, and then on the way out, you stop in the gift shop and get a memento to take home with you. Well, that's an important part of our business, to be sure. But really what we've been talking about in the last year or so is, how do we turn that on its head? How do we leverage retail as a funnel to bring more awareness about MoMA and drive more people to the museum? And you know, one of the ways that happens is through product. So by way of example, the MoMA Champion Hoodie. So the Champion Hoodie was part of our exhibit in 2017, Items is Fashion Modern. And it's been a bestseller for us really ever since. And it's been a success, particularly with Gen Z. It's been viral, it's been word of mouth. You're as likely to see it in Japan as you are on the subway as you are in the East Village. And it's also been really big on social media. So lots more eyeballs and lots more people thinking about MoMA and what is MoMA. And that's just, you know, that's fantastic. The second way that we've really started to bring people into the museum, you know, ecosystem is through our licensing partners. As much as retail, as much as MoMA has a really big footprint, our license partners also have big footprints in different areas. So they can bring us different customers in different geographies of different segments. And so that's been a really big driver for us to drive awareness about the brand. And what we've seen when we survey visitors at the museum is that people seeing our branded merchandise is driving traffic into the museum that's measurable and significant. So you know, the last thing I would say is every purchase at our retail locations or the retail channel supports the operations of the museum. So our funds go to support education and exhibitions at the museum.
So now you mentioned hoodies there, so that's quite a nice segue into the next question, which is really about, we're asking everyone here how to engage with Gen Z. That's quite a hot topic here at Shop Talk. So I guess that's one of the ways, is it? It's with some of the branded goods like hoodies.
Branded goods like hoodies. And the last few years, 3 to 5 years, we've seen significant growth in our Gen Z customer.
Okay.
And like any good retailer, we're trying to meet our customer where they are, right? And so this has really been a good lesson for us and has helped push us to grow our social media presence, to experiment in TikTok. We're creating a lot more video content now to tell the stories of the product and explain where the product is coming from. So we'll talk about how to use a product and how a product works. We'll talk about what's special about a product and why we brought it into our collection. And I think that's really paying off. And then it's also through our assortment. And so what have we learned from the MoMA hoodies, and what can we learn to help inform our assortment going forward to make sure we continue to speak to the Gen Z customer with an eye towards collaborations and exclusives to make sure we can maximize our impact.
It's always with an eye on the next product, isn't it?
It is.
You know, what's the next one that's going to take off on social media?
That's right.
Absolutely.
And you never know, right?
You just got to experiment, as you say. Okay, well, let's finish up. What's next for MoMA then? Where do you see this going in the next few years?
So I think our team really gets the most excited about new ideas. And right now, between the various collaborations we have going on, the licensing partnerships, just the new thinking that's happening at the museum. I don't think there's been ever a more exciting time to think about the future of retail. In the stores, we're really looking at how can we take that product storytelling that we've talked about and better surface it. How can we create more of an experience for our customers in the store? And I think that's really important to us. In the really short term on our timeline, we have a very exciting launch coming up just in time for Earth Month. Mm-hmm. We have a capsule with Pangaea, which is a material science company. And we're bringing in some lifestyle apparel in a capsule that is Yoko Ono for MoMA.
Cool.
Yoko Ono's an iconic artist who's part of MoMA's collection. And we're really excited to bring this product to our customers and surprise and delight them.
Yeah. I need to make a trip to New York, I think.
Great. I would love to walk you around the store.
I'll take you up on that.
Thanks so much.
Jesse Goldstein, thanks for joining me here today.
Pleasure.
Okay, joining me now is Gabby Saper, who is the CEO of CMY Cubes. Gabby.
Hi.
Lovely to see you at Shop
nice
Talk.
Nice to be here. So excited.
How's your Shop Talk been?
So amazing. So incredibly exciting. Feels like they're squeezing a whole year into a few days, and I just have so much to do, but it's so well worth it.
Well, we're so excited you're here. We really want to hear more about CMY Cube. So tell us, how did you come up with the idea?
Yeah, absolutely. So during COVID, we all had extra time on our hands, of course, and I asked my partner a question. He's now the co-founder, and I said to him, what is subtractive color mixing? And he, of course, being an engineer, wanted to explain it to me in detail. So we went to the workshop, and he said, I'm going to show you, I'm going to make something for you. And that was the original prototype that we created. And that then stemmed into me wanting to buy something, which didn't exist. And so together we came up with the CMY Cube. Which
okay, and there it is.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's a subtractive color mixing tool. It has three faces with different colors, and at every angle you can see different colors of this visible spectrum. So it's totally unique, it's never been done before, and we launched kind of preliminary as a pre-order on TikTok, unintentionally sold 1,000 in our first month, and had to scramble to figure out how to sell and actually manufacture them. And so it took a few months. Three and a bit months later, we managed to launch and actually ship the product out in no branded packaging, and then relaunched with branded logos and an actual website, Shopify website, and a brand to actually sit on and launch properly, and went viral again, and it's been growing since then.
Yeah, absolutely. And it just, you're right. You just want to turn it around in your hands, don't you? And just
nobody
see the different colours.
Exactly. Nobody understands why they want it. They just want to pick it up and
that's right.
They want to hold it.
So what happened next then? How did you fulfil that demand?
We had a kind of oh crap moment, realising we needed to fulfil thousands of orders.
Yeah.
So we then got to work, prototyped for the next few months. It took us like 3 months on average to actually get a mass marketable prototype in hand. Had moments where we wanted to refund everybody and just call it quits, but we persevered and we actually managed to ship everybody's products out by Christmas. Then in January of the following year, we then relaunched with branding with a Shopify site and did it properly, and went viral again on TikTok, and it's just been up and up since then.
Wow. So what do you put the exponential growth down to then? Is it TikTok? Is it other channels? Or is it just a superb product?
It's all of the above. Yeah, it's all of the above. It's an omni-channel marketing strategy, really. Yep. We are a social-first business. We go viral on every single platform. I mean, Reddit, YouTube, TikTok, Facebook Reels, literally on mum forums. Wow. So you name it, we're on there and we're going viral. So
what sparks it then? What's the kind of initial
usually
content?
Usually a GIF of, or a GIF of the product spinning, and then people are like, what's that?
Right.
Or a video of somebody playing with it, and people are like, instantly, I need that. Yeah. I don't know why. And we wake up, and it's every single day is something has happened, and we don't know, can't expect anything, but we're constantly innovating with our social approach, and we're growing that way.
Yeah. And so, what does the product range look like?
Yeah.
Is it challenging to come up with new products?
Man, so we started with one product, and we would never have thought where we were today is where we're going to be. So we have 27 SKUs now, and every single product we release is what our customers ask us for. So we have a rotating spreadsheet of the customer questions that come in. I dare you to make this. Can you make that? Oh my God, can you release this? And the priority list changes based on how many people ask. And that's literally how we work on our prototypes. And we've got an never-ending list of product to bring out. But every single time we do launch a product, we do a pre-order. and they usually sell out. So,
No, I'm really curious to know. So when they get in touch with you, do you go, oh, wow, I never even thought of that?
Absolutely.
Or do you go, oh, no, we probably would have got to that?
No, it's always like
that's awesome.
Our puzzle that we launched this last year is a color-changing puzzle. Yep. We would never have gone into the puzzle route.
Right.
We were going to stay with our acrylic products. We were going to expand the range. Someone said, I dare you to make a color-changing puzzle. We were like, game on. Okay. We've made it, and it has gone mental. And now we're bringing out a whole puzzle range. So they are the ones that are telling us what they want. Mm-hmm. They're the buyers. So we just do that, and we listen to them. And it time and time again, it works. We sell out, and it's because we listen to them.
Yeah. Just finish up by telling me what you think's next for CMY Cubes. How excited are you about where it could go?
Yeah, I honestly think this year is going to be the craziest year yet for us. We are growing exponentially, and I think we have some really exciting partnerships in the works. We have some really exciting plans and product releases in the works, and when they do come to fruition, we're just going to keep on growing and keep launching in new countries and hopefully take over and become a household name. So very exciting.
We look forward to you
Thank
being
you.
A household name.
Yeah.
Be safe. Thanks for joining me
Thank
here
you
today.
So much. Good to be here.
Joining me now is Jenny McLean. She is Managing Partner and Retail Industry Lead at Clarkston Consulting. Jenny, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Lovely to have you on the podcast. So we're here to talk about the supply chain with you. We hear a lot about data across the supply chain, don't we? So how do brands approach using advanced data and analytics to improve demand forecasting? Wow, that was quite a long question, but I hope you got that.
It certainly was. Well, and so I'll start. Certainly there's a wide and growing number of technologies out there. We're on the expo floor, you can walk around here, and it's a little bit overwhelming how many choices there are for retailers to consider. But what we have seen is when retailers find the right technology for them and they leverage it well, it can create incredible capabilities for them.
Yep.
But I'll also say that technology is not enough, and we see that over and over again. Mm-hmm. It's also, and you hear this a lot at this event, about the data integration, data quality, data governance. And the other thing is around the data culture, which creates a mindset shift. And I had the opportunity to talk to the CEO of Reformation today on stage, and she talked about how they've built a really great culture of data across the company, and that's been key to their forecasting process.
Sure. Now, consumer demand and consumer-driven trends change quite rapidly, don't they, in the current space. So how do companies keep up and still manage to optimize demand forecasting plus their inventory planning? I mean, it's quite a handful, isn't it?
It is. You know, we always say retail moves so fast. Mm. It moves faster than other industries, and I'm pretty sure that it just keeps getting faster. So I think what's key to that is really staying customer-centric. Mm-hmm. A great example of a company that's doing that well is Shein. They're really like built their company around that. And they talked on stage today. I was able to talk to one of their executive team members that they've shortened the distance between demand forecasting and producing. They're very good at measuring the demand, plugging that into a very flexible, fast supply chain model, mm-hmm. and delivering on that. And then the effect of that is being really customer-centric. Now, the other thing we see is it's also about matching the innovation cycle of a customer. If you think about it, different retailers have different products which have different innovation cycles. A retailer selling, let's say there's your cell phone, has a different innovation cycle than fashion.
Yes.
You have to move at the speed of that.
And then talk to me about how retailers work with other stakeholders in their supply chain to improve their demand forecasting. How does that work?
Well, some don't.
Right, yeah.
Some don't do it well. Some companies have to do it. Mm-hmm. So bring in another example. Wayfair, a household name, many people don't realize that they don't own most of their inventory.
Okay.
Even in their stores, they have a few of them, most of that inventory is not theirs and it's owned by their suppliers. That obviously creates complexities, and so they're forced to create these highly functioning collaborative relationships with their suppliers. They have to focus on data sharing and AI with their suppliers, which is a whole other different problem than other
companies. Usually complex, I imagine.
Have to deal with. And it's not easy. Again, you bring in some of the data challenges with that. So you've got data integration challenges from disparate sources, different disparate companies, data sharing, and then trust and transparency is one that really comes up in this space. So if you think about it, and you're leveraging your data and AI models across companies, it brings the need for trust and transparency and explainable AI to the forefront.
Yeah, sure. That all sounds great. So tell me, how does Clarkston Consulting fit into all of this then? What do you guys do?
Yeah. Well, thanks for asking.
Yeah, no problem.
So Clarkston Consulting is an industry-focused firm. We focus on retail, consumer products, and life sciences. And we have built our entire business model around serving the needs of our clients where they are. So no matter where a company is on their journey to improve demand forecasting, inventory planning, or supply chain operations in general, we can usually help. Now, I know I was on stage today talking about a supply chain topic, and I'm here talking about that, but we also, just to mention, have equally strong services in other areas. We do a lot with retail technology strategy, process optimization, data and analytics change management, project and program management. So our whole goal, and part of the, why we're here at Shop Talk, is to stay on top of what's happening in the industry,
yep,
so that we can adjust and evolve our services to serve the needs of our clients when they need us.
Yeah. Look, really appreciate you sharing those insights with us today. Jenny McLean, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks once again to all our guests who joined us here on Bread Financial's booth at Shop Talk.
You can find us on all the usual social media platforms, and if you want to get in touch with the show, you can do that via the contact form on our website.
But for now, from me, Russell Goldsmith, and Graham Barrett, thanks for listening and watching, and goodbye.